thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you holding up in this weather?
This is not what my broker told me. I don't know what the statute of limitations is on broker misrepresentations, but when I bought my house 19 years ago, this is what the broker told me. It's always 72 degrees. It never rains. There's no flooding. And it's very rare that we have a fire.
Yes, she lied.
She lied.
She lied.
Yeah, it's very disappointing.
Yes, oh gosh, yeah, my heart goes out to those people in Goleta who lost their homes.
And, you know, what is really awful is that we're so sick of all of these disasters that it was like deja vu. I don't live near Goleta, but it just reminded me of December and January.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So by any chance today, given the heat, do we still have
a
guest?
We do have a guest. We are thrilled to have with us in studio Michael Cooney, who is an attorney, an investor, and a planning commissioner for Santa Barbara City. Thanks for being here.
Santa Barbara County, isn't it?
Oh, is it county?
Santa Barbara County.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Even more important.
Even more important, exactly. Yeah. Santa Barbara County. Yeah. Thanks for being here with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
So the first article we have today is reminiscent of
1908.
Right. Well, I'm reading a book about 1850, so maybe it is, but of 2008. And I had to read this twice because I could not believe I was reading something that was real news. And it's entitled Blackstone, which is one of the largest private equity firms in the world, has drawn regulators to a rare move. Now, back in 2008, there was a proliferation of what's called a credit default swaps, which are essentially are bets between two institutions. And in the case of the one we're talking about now is that Blackstone entered into one of these transactions where they were betting that Hovnanian, which is a public real estate company, would go bankrupt. And the other side of this credit default swap was a hedge fund that was betting that they would not default. Now, these credit default swaps, which are called derivatives, were one of the major reasons why the economic collapse was so intense, because there was so much money that was quote-unquote bet, because they were derivatives, meaning that they were derived from real transactions. They could be exponentially multiplied, so there was so much more risk in the system than people realized. You would think that in the current environment, you would have more regulation and less greediness. Well, here's a story that's really hard to believe. In this transaction where Blackstone was betting that Hovnanian would go bankrupt, they, once they entered into this contract, they went to Hovnanian and said, why don't you default on your bonds? And as soon as you default on your bonds, we'll give you a new loan. And because they did that, they followed through. Blackstone claimed that they were bankrupt because of the default and then called in the $333 million bet from the hedge fund and said, you have to pay us now.
This is just, that article is so unbelievable.
And when the SEC got involved, Blackstone didn't back off. It wasn't until multiple lawsuits and the SEC finally, and this is, you know, the Trump SEC now, went crazy on them that they backed off and unwound the trade. But, you know, this is 2018. And, you know, you talk about greed and taking advantage of the system. You'd think that what went on 10 years ago would not continue. And here we are once again.
It's depressing.
Speaking of depressing, the next article is entitled Stock Buybacks Are Booming, But Share Prices Aren't Budging. And this year, as much as $800 billion in stock has been purchased by companies, which is the largest it's been ever. 57% of the 350 companies in the S&P 500 that bought back their shares actually had a price decline since they started buying back their shares. So first of all, it hasn't really worked. That is, the buybacks, which are huge, ended up where the price of the stock is less than when they started. But more importantly, the whole predicate behind the tax...
The 16% tax cut.
Tax cut was to incentivize companies to invest. And what this article is saying, by the way, and this article is in the Wall Street Journal.
And I think to define invest, it wasn't designed for share buybacks. It was designed for capital improvements or capital expenditures,
right.
More jobs, salaries. Right. That's what the intent that was published was.
Right. And the article says the majority of capital deployed is going right back to shareholders and not reinvestment in businesses. So there's two issues here. One is that the companies are not doing what the administration hoped they would do. But second of all, what they're doing is making bad decisions, it looks like, because the fact that they're buying their own stock back, which is increasing demand for the stock, should at least result in the price of the stock going up. In fact, it's not. So it looks like they're making crummy decisions. And I have a companion article. This article was written 3 days ago, but an article today in the Wall Street Journal, which I think is sort of a bounce off of this article, has a different take on all of this. It says the real problem with stock buybacks isn't the fact that they're not investing it in their plant and equipment and research, is that it's really helping the offices of the company. And it's doing so, this author says, by inflating the price of the stock so that the options that they hold will be
in the money
mm-hmm. during the time period that the options, before the options expire. And he did a study, I don't know how good it is, that showed that the only one to benefit by this is share buybacks and is the corporate offices, and they don't have to report this until the end of the quarter when they're buying their stock back. So the reality is there's no way for investors to know what's going on until a whole quarter is over.
Right, because many of the C-suite and officers of these publicly traded companies have a plan in place, a sales plan in place for their company stock. And so it's a arm's length distance transaction, but they know that every quarter or every month they're going to sell X amount of shares. And this buyback is dictated by the officers of the company. And so you can see how it gets into a...
Well, if you have an option, let's say, for a company that stock is 15, and you have an option to buy it at 2 because it was part of your compensation, and it's going to expire, because these options expire. They have to have an expiration date.
Usually they have a 10-year expiration
date.
So
if they're going to expire in 3 months, and you're an executive, and you're going to make a lot of money, what this author is saying is there's an incentive to buy back your own shares to get it up during the period in which you can still exercise your option. Sort of a cynical view. And the last article we have today is something I didn't realize, and that is the new tax code provides for a deduction in taxes at the old tax rate for companies that are funding unfunded pension liabilities if they fund the unfunded pension liabilities during calendar year 2018. Now, this is sort of like an esoteric issue, but it really turns out to be quite important because so many companies are taking advantage of this loophole or this lower tax rate if you fund your unfunded
pension. I don't know if I'd call it a loophole, because it's good for everybody if the pension plan is funded as opposed to unfunded, much more likely to pay the individuals their pension.
Yeah, absolutely. So nothing wrong, but the reason it's important to understand this is because so much money is being plowed into, this year, I think it was, they say the article, $63 billion. But what happens is when you fund a pension fund, where does the money go? Well, the money typically goes into fixed income. And in this case, so much of this money is going into 30-year bonds. And that has caused the yield on 30-year bonds to go down. And the reason that I find it interesting is there's been so much talk in the last 2 weeks about the flattening of the yield curve, meaning that the spread between 2-year yields and 30-year yields are becoming equal, or the yield curve being flat.
Right.
Is an indication of a slowdown in the economy, expectations of a slowdown in the economy, or increase in expectations about inflation. But part of it is simply the technical aspect of companies plowing all this money into the bond market.
Right. And, you know, the difference between a 30-year bond and a 10-year bond right now is virtually the same, 2.9 on the 10-year and 3% on the 30-year. As an investor buying in bonds, it's not a good deal for you to lock in 3% for the next 30 years.
So when we return, Michael Cooney is going to explain to us how to invest successfully in the bond market. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
And if you're just joining us, we have Michael Cooney, attorney, investor, and county planning commissioner with us in studio. Thanks for being here, Michael.
Glad to be here.
Great. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up at UC Santa Barbara for undergraduate? And tell us the beginning life story.
Well, if we go all the way back to UCSB, the choice was made because a few of my friends were coming here, and I was on the way to the Naval Academy. But in these pre-Vietnam days, you had to qualify with 100% perfect 20/20 vision in both eyes, and I failed the physical. So it was a last-minute decision, UCSB, and it was one of those forks in the road that otherwise would have been much different.
Right. That's interesting to think about, I'm sure. Now, where do you come from originally?
Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area.
So I guess my question to you is, are you officially a local now? Because in Santa Barbara, I feel like the number always goes out.
You're right. And I think it's long enough ago now. It was 4 years at UCSB and then up to law school in the Bay Area and back in 1969. So next year it'll be 50 years.
Wow. I think that does qualify you. I'll give it to you.
I was told that I'm not going to be an official resident until I lose my New York accent.
That's never going to happen.
That's never going to happen. So.
So you have a very long and involved history with Santa Barbara. And so you were a partner at a law firm, at a major local law firm, and you decided to branch out on your own. And what decisions did you go through to break from a major firm in Santa Barbara and really go out and hang your own shingle?
That's a good question, Diane, because I envisioned that my law practice here with a large, very esteemed law firm was going to last for the rest of my career, and then I would have an opportunity to do some things that I had wanted to do in a volunteer sense for a long time. The one exception was coaching baseball at the high school, which I could work into my practice even then. And I started coaching there at Santa Barbara High School in 1985 when my son was playing baseball. But the opportunity came along. It wasn't my choice, but one of my college classmates who was also living in Santa Barbara and was an investor in small companies had grown his business to such that he really needed some legal backup, some accounting backup, and he suggested that I might want to join him and build up an investment company, and that's what happened in 1997.
Wow, that's a cool story. So were you his legal representation, was your firm, and you were the legal representation for his firm before he asked you to join?
No, not at all. And I think we came around to thinking that the relationship could be beneficial for both of us very late in the game. We were friends. We were former college classmates, and we enjoyed living in the same community and seeing each other socially. But as he envisioned his firm growing, it seemed to me that there were skills I had developed as a lawyer that would be useful to him, not only in law, but in terms of building this support company that the investment company really needed.
When I left a major Wall Street firm and started my own business, I got an education in how different it is to be part of a big company and to go to a small company. And, you know, for our listeners that are thinking about going on your own, I mean, in your case, it was a little different because the person who you went with it was already established. But there are some pitfalls in leaving the comfort of a big firm and going with a smaller entrepreneurial kind of firm.
Oh, absolutely. When we started Arlington Financial Advisors back in 2010, leaving a big major Wall Street company and starting our own business, it was scary. The first year was a little scary and having to deal with a lot of things that you didn't have to usually deal with, like paying the electric bill and the phone bill and this, you know, just the simple things that you don't realize.
The law firm here was very comfortable in the sense that all the support was there. Wonderful assistants, good young associates that could do a lot of the research, office managers. I mean, it was a full-service law firm, and there were nearly 30 lawyers, and it was comfortable. And that played into the decision, I thought. You know, instead of as an alternative to continuing to the end of my career for another 20 years or so, why not try something different? It wasn't like jumping off a cliff, but it was definitely like leaving a warm building and going out into the cold.
That's a great analogy. We have a caller.
Hello, caller.
Oh, yes, is this me?
That's you.
All right. My name's Joe. Michael, I live in the city. And I'm kind of working with this ADU situation. And from a planning perspective in the county, do you guys see this differently than the city does? I feel like there's been a fair amount of flack thrown up by the city, and I'm not sure if that's something that you're even working on over there in the county side.
Well, yes, we are. As a matter of fact, Joe, we have gone through a major review of the ordinance for Santa Barbara County. It is different than the city's ordinance, but the concept is the same. That is an attempt to increase the housing opportunities for those who live in our very expensive community.
I will say it feels like, you know, that's the state's goal, and you know, from the city's perspective, it feels like it's maybe a little different than that they're trying not to participate as much as possible with the sheer number of ADUs that might otherwise happen, and so I know that's maybe it's a loaded question for you, but does the county see it as facilitating, or does it see it as trying to control this otherwise what might be a flood?
It's a good question. I think we had that debate, and the commissioners decided, at least a majority of us decided, that we had an obligation not only imposed by the state, but by common sense, to at least increase the opportunities for those properties that lent themselves to expansion. There's a limit there, and there are other housing opportunities that the legislature has suggested that don't work out as well. But I think the accessory dwelling unit is one that at least we were able to work with and move along to the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you, caller.
Now, Michael, so on that ADU question, I know that the city has passed some new regulations around, you know, if you make it an authorized auxiliary dwelling unit, that you need to have, it needs to be the owner's primary residence as opposed to two rental properties. Now, is the county falling on that same, in that same vein of regulation, or is the county a little more liberal on that stance? Or have you even touched it? I don't know.
No, that was part of the discussion, and I'm stretching back about 3 months now to recall the substance of it. But there are several exemptions that the state suggested local governments could follow. It had to do mostly with the size of the property and the size of the prospective accessory dwelling. Those two issues, along with the desire to not upset the balance of a neighborhood in terms of parking and noise and a lot of other factors, clashed in this, because in particular in Montecito, which I represent, at least at the county level, there was a lot of concern that it was going to change the character of the neighborhood. But I think the ordinances, as recommended to the Board of Supervisors, struck a compromise that allowed some additional building where there was none allowed before, but not to the extent that it would make or break a neighborhood.
Well, you know, I find it interesting, the rules and regulations, because living here and not being a commissioner, you know about a ton of people that have, you know, converted garages or converted guest houses, you know, which once was a pool cabana is now a guest house. And it's just not legally done. It's just they just use it in that capacity. And so I guess my question is, was there a concern that there'd be a flurry of new building, or I felt like most of it was permitting what was already there? Do you know my question? I know I'm not being very eloquent in it, but
no. But I agree with you that when I first came to Santa Barbara, I was amazed at how many people were living in someone else's garage that
right.
had been converted to a bedroom or even a full dwelling unit, and those were clearly not legal, and yet the local governments tend to look the other way because. There was no other housing affordable.
And we still
people.
Don't have a lot of affordable housing.
We do not, and we have as much need as ever for the kinds of employees that could benefit from being able to live closer to their jobs.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back. ¶¶
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394.
Hospice of Santa Barbara is there to help when we're adjusting to living with a life-threatening illness, facing death, anticipating the death of a loved one, or healing our grief after a death. Hospice of Santa Barbara can provide the emotional, social, and spiritual care needed in a supportive, compassionate environment. Hospice of Santa Barbara provides professional counseling for individuals and has many support groups and programs for adults, teens, and children. Services are free, made possible by our community's generosity and by all of the highly trained, wonderful volunteers that give of their time to help those in need. If you would like to make a donation, become a volunteer, or support the important work of Hospice of Santa Barbara, or find out more about hospice services for you or someone you love, please call 563-8820, 563-8820, or visit our website at www.hospiceofsantabarbara.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. You know, Michael, one of the things that I've heard people discuss, which is so anathema to Montecito, but I wonder if anyone has brought it to the level that you're sitting at, which is in some of the areas in Montecito that were totally wiped out and that may not be really suitable for building. And I'm thinking of the place right off of East Mountain, East Valley. That whole street was eliminated.
Glen Oaks and Randall Road.
Randall. Did anyone consider that? I think there were seven houses that were eliminated or swept away. Replacing them with I know this is going to sound radical, a seven-unit condo that could be built up away from the creek. It would provide an ability for the people to not lose the value of the land, and it would replace the housing. Now, I know, you know, Montecito will go crazy, you know, a high rise, you know, with seven units, but it's a sort of a equitable way of making things right. Has that come up at all?
No, it hasn't in the concept of rebuilding in place. We did pass an ordinance not 2 months ago, which basically allows people to rebuild on their same parcel, even if it's a different location on the parcel, maybe closer to the boundary lines, closer to neighbors. But it can only increase in size by 10% if you want to rebuild with no review, no design review, no neighborhood input. So it was fairly narrow. If you want to move fast and get your house built, you can do that. But if you want to build something different, if you want a different design, if you want to build a duplex instead of a home, then all the rules are the same as they always have been.
But you're dealing with people who have equity in the land that in order to save the equity, they're going to have to do something stupid like rebuild. So is there a government role in being rational rather than being traditional and to say, look, I know you're going to build because you don't want to lose your land, but we have a solution for you where you can sell the land to a developer who could then use it to build something that's safe?
You know, Neil, there are some, I think, novel ideas that could work in this situation. Suppose that a homeowner doesn't want to rebuild but doesn't want to lose all the equity in their home. It is possible that they could sell the land to a land trust, Santa Barbara Land Trust, to use an example, and even at a reduced price point, they would have the benefit of tax deductions that would offset a lot of the capital gain they might suffer if they just sold the property, rebuilt, and then sold. So I don't think that the context you suggest of a multi-family building going up instead of flat is going to be successful in the Montecito area or even in Carpinteria.
Yeah, I know there are many homeowners in that area that are hoping for a solution like the land trust, because this isn't the first time that area has been wiped out through flood. In
exactly.
the 60s, it has happened. And, you know, they're really between a rock and a hard place. There was one woman interviewed in the Independent that talked about she bought her home for $12 million. You know, the land trust isn't going to be able to rebuy her land for $12 million. So it's a really difficult place. But if they, the homeowners that I've spoken to about this have said, but I feel like it's an ethical issue as well, knowing that if I sell this land, rebuilt or not, to somebody else, it's not safe. This could happen to them.
You're exactly right. I think it has to do with disclosures that have to be made to a subsequent buyer. It would not be right, and I don't think legal, to sell without disclosing the historic risk to this property from debris flows that have recurred now. They don't happen every year, but when they do, they're devastating, and this more than any. So it all has to be taken into account. I think the role of planning and development at the county level is important, but what the county planning commissioners are saying is, okay, we recognize that, but we want people that want to stay to be able to build without the great cost and time that it takes to get a normal project through. If you, for various reasons, don't want to rebuild, we're not going to stand in your way. But I don't think the county has the ability to buy the property, say, for a public park.
That idea has been floated as well.
Expensive, right. Property still, even though you know, the stream has run over its banks in the recent
past. When the insurance companies folded on the cause of the flooding, it made it possible for people, I guess, for the most part, to be reimbursed for their houses. What's going to happen next year? Is if this happens again next year, is it still going to be a result of last year's fire, or are people going to be at risk of losing not just the value of their land, but their house as well?
It's a real concern, and it's one reason why the county Board of Supervisors disagreed with the commission, which basically said, you know, if you're going to change the location of your lot in a way of the home on your lot in a way that affects your neighbors, we think the neighbors ought to get an opportunity to publicly speak about the project. The board said, look, the minute we get the neighborhood involved in concerns about all the things we've been concerned about in Santa Barbara County for ages, it's going to slow the project down, and people are going to be at risk of losing their insurance for alternative living, for example. So it's a real problem, and that was the board's decision, and that's the way we're going forward at this time. But we've got lots of new issues coming up that we'll have to deal with.
I've also heard with the you know, if you're rebuilding your home, not in a bigger, you know, not a bigger footprint, but on a new location on your lot, that on Randall Road, there is a homeowner, an out-of-town homeowner, who is rebuilding. And so how is that going to work? Because there really is no road there anymore. How is that going to be approved? And is there going to be a road there? You know, that's a question that when I heard that, I thought, gosh, how is that even going to be possible?
Now, that homeowner that is building right on Randall Road, where Randall Road was, already had permits before the debris flow. So it was an original, typical building permit, planning permit, which he obtained. So all he was doing after the debris flow was following through on his permits. In order to build, you normally have to show access to a main road, and I'm sure he's required to do that.
Gotcha.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that four-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
So, Michael, tell us about the investment group of Santa Barbara and what do you do there?
Well, the investment group is basically a group of investors who invest for their own account, very small. But my partner founded this when he got out of business school in the late 60s, and it was just himself and an assistant, and then others joined over time. And with success and the need to hire support personnel, it is now a company of 15 people, but it's still very small, very focused. And my role is primarily like an attorney in a family office situation. My partners have issues with trusts, estate planning, foundations that give money, and a myriad of other needs that that I can help with my legal background. But it's very different than practicing every day in a business litigation law firm.
So now, would you say primarily the investments that you make are angel-type investments or further along in the life cycle of a company?
They tend to be companies that have a proven track record where we can see the path from break-even to profitability, and then beyond that, the possibility of sale or merger, the kinds of things that you see typically. But, a good example is a company called AppFolio, which
is doing great.
Based in Goleta. And we were early investors, but it was already a solid company with great management, and those are the kinds of things that we look for.
So you're basically a VC company, I would.
Closer than anything else.
Yeah. Like, although I know that has a bad rap sometimes, but that's great. Yeah, and Appeal is doing fabulously and just raised some more money and got picked up a deal with Costco, so
yeah,
for their avocados, so the Midwest can now enjoy them as well. So that's great. And so now you've been with the investment group of Santa Barbara since 1997. So.
Yes. So it seemed like a very short time compared to the time I spent in law practice, and it's gone much faster. And I think part of that is due to the fact that I have been able to take advantage of opportunities to do volunteer work in addition to the Planning Commission. I'm on a commission in Sacramento having to do with teacher credentialing. I'm not an educator. It's a lot of news to me, but it does involve my legal background in terms of determining whether a particular offense is going to cause an adverse action against an educator's credential. And unfortunately, those are issues that we face on a regular basis. But coaching baseball with my son now, it's a real gift, something that I wouldn't have had time to do in a full-time law practice. I make the time. I have a very understanding wife who's
just as involved as you are in the community.
But she could have said, you know, if you're going to cut back on what you're doing in business, how about some time for me? And she basically has said, you know, I know you want to be busy doing something else, and that's
well. You know why she said that? Because I've been retired for over 20 years, and they're friends, my wife and your wife. And my wife said, make sure he stays working to her. So, so sometimes it looks like a great idea, but you know, it's a problem.
I've suspected that actually.
This is the firm that you left to go to the law firm with. So this is the decision back in '97 was a good one, obviously.
I think so, yes. I still, along with my classmate who invited me to join the firm, we're well along in terms of our careers, but we have no desire to sit back on the beach and do anything other than what we're doing.
Speaking of the beach, you represented the family that owned the Miramar, and you were involved with the sale to Studio 54 guy, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. There have been three subsequent owners of the Miramar property. And as you know, it's finally reaching the rebuilding stage and the final stages of that. But Ian Schrager was the first buyer. We had a very interesting year, myself and two fellow trustees who succeeded to the trust of the then owner, June Althwaite. And we had to run this very busy motel for a year, and we found a manager and a retired Hilton long-term employee and worked together and met twice a week to decide on how many employees to have and what kind of room rates to charge and things that none of us had any experience.
So that's how come you can make a bed very well?
Nothing like on-the-job learning, right?
No, there was a lot of that, not down to the bed making, but you know, it was a venerable property that families had been coming to from all over mm-hmm. Southern California and beyond for many, many years, and we were anxious for them to continue to be able to do that until we could get ourselves together to sell it.
And you continued on as a trustee of Outweight, which has been a very important contributor to so many not-for-profits in town.
As a result of that property, yes, it's now our goal to see that some of our greatest needs in this community are fulfilled through the foundation.
Thank you for your service, because it's so necessary, and one of the major reasons why Santa Barbara is such an amazing community is trustees like yourself, as well as the funds of which to keep our community like it is. So tell us a little bit about What, you know, I hear baseball as being your number one passion as it's weaved its way through our conversation today. But you sit on a lot of different boards. You've been recognized by many different organizations. This Family Service Agency comes to mind right now. What would you say is your number one passion aside from baseball? Because you're so involved in the community, and you know, what do you see as your next chapter? You're young. You have a lot of time to give back to our community, and you've done so much of it. So what would you like to highlight?
Well, I appreciate your comments, Diane. I think I've been very fortunate in terms of my life in Santa Barbara, and the real general goal is to give back as much as I can with the time that's available, and still carve out enough time to travel, enough time to enjoy my friends and my son's children, my daughter's children who are growing up to be beautiful children. And, you know, grandparents have a big responsibility in their lives, and I believe in time for that as well.
And so getting back to baseball, can you still hit?
You know, I've thought about that a lot, Neil, but I would no more step into a batter's box with a 16-year-old who can throw 90 miles an hour than I would jump off the top of this building. It's a very dangerous thing to do.
Well, there's now a pitcher that can pitch over 100 miles an hour. How does that look to you?
Well, it looks great because I'm not in the batter's box.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and believe it or not, we'll be back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Cota Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food, prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, as a planning commissioner, I have to ask, because it feels like a thankless job. I have to say, in Santa Barbara, when I hear people complaining about government, it's usually about the Planning Commission. What makes you continue to want to volunteer? Because you've been on the Planning Commission for quite some time. You've been the chair. You've been on it since 2004?
2004. Naomi Schwartz.
Oh, I love Naomi.
Yeah. She was a force in our community, and she tried for two or three years to get me to consider it. I had been active in neighborhood projects and went on the Planning Commission and found that, you know, there was a lot more to consider than just the legal aspects of land use law, which I had some very limited acquaintance with. So the main reason that I'm still doing it, I think, is that I'm still learning. It's every meeting there's a new set of projects. We have in Santa Barbara County, we have some major oil developments coming up that we'll talk about it at great length later this year. It presents the issue, you know, is oil a product that we should continue to explore and develop over time versus all that it costs the community in which the oil drilling is taking place. I think it's a question we could answer on a national scale. We have oil drilling in our channel.
Right.
Where else is oil drilled for except in Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico, you know, right off our beautiful shores? So I think it's a legitimate question that if you work hard, read everything, and show up regularly, you gain from that experience.
That's great to hear. So you're still doing it because you feel like it's providing personal growth.
That's
for
right.
You, which I think is important. It's how you stay young, how you're able to still throw a curveball in baseball.
Well, you know how young he looks. You know, he's 88. So I think everyone should serve on county government because you get to relax. You get to hear interesting speakers all the time.
So I have to say, I have a good friend of mine who's an architect, and he went before the planning commission for a home. And they said, you know, I just don't like the colors that you've chosen. I think you need a little more lipstick. You know, and that's kind of I heard that and I thought, oh my gosh, how is he keeping a straight face? You know, this can go to another hearing because they didn't like the trim color. You know, and so it's one of those things where you guys do get a bad rap, but thank you for all you do for our community because you help it keep that Santa Barbara feel. And that's, you know, what I think people do love about our community as much as we love to hate it sometimes too.
And it's true. It is. A lot of work sometimes. Neil's probably watched some of those hearings that go on for 4 or 5 hours, and entire neighborhoods turn out. And I, it's such basic democracy. Some people come before the Planning Commission and say, you know, I've never spoken in public before, but I am concerned about this development in my neighborhood. And I think to have that institution be good and effective and hardworking is what the people deserve.
And I guess my question for you is, how do you have time to do all that you do in the community? Have you created the cloning feature of yourself? Because no. It's a lot of work. You do a lot of reading and research before the Planning Commission hearings, and you're informed. And so it's hard to find the time. How do you do it?
You have to be pretty organized, and I will go back to my law school education for teaching me to be efficient with my study time, and that's how it is. It's not just me. I have 4 great commissioners and many others who I've served with over the years, and they're all prepared. It's fantastic.
So, final question: when are you going to run for governor?
You know, my governor is just leaving office, and I understand it's too late to succeed him, so it's not on my list.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you all back next week.